This episode is brought to you in part by W Publishing Group, publisher of The Hidden Peace, Finding True Security, Strength, and Confidence Through Humility, written and narrated by Joel Matamali. Available now, everywhere you get your audiobooks.
Dynamic voices for a diverse church. This is Pass the Mic.
Greetings and God bless. Welcome to another episode of Pastor Mike, Dynamic Voices for a Diverse Church, powered by The Witness, a Black Christian collective. I'm your host, Tyler Burns. You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Burns Clan. Please follow at your own risk. And joining me today is a very special guest, no stranger to the PTM family, no stranger to The Witness BCC. She is a writer. She is an author, which we're going to be talking about today. She is a phenomenal podcast host. She is one half of the incredible duo of Melanated Faith, which is a witness podcast. Stop what you are doing right now, or I think you can multitask and go ahead and subscribe to Melanated Faith while you are listening to this conversation with the one, the only, Faith Brooks. Faith, what is going on?
Hey, nothing much. You know, it's just a nice little rainy day in Maryland, so things are going well here.
I don't want to hear nothing much because you have written two books. I feel like you got two more coming out later in the next year. You are on the move. You're recording podcasts. You get married. You got a dog. I mean, come on now. This is a lot. There's a lot going on. How have you been? What has this season been like for you?
You know, it's been pretty wild. It's been really busy, as you stated. It's really funny because I started a lot of these projects in 2020 or 2021, but they're all kind of like coming out around the same time. And so it's been really interesting working on launching two books back to back. So The Anti-Racism Journal was first, and now my new book, Remember Me Now, comes out in January. But this season has been so special, you know, and in the book, I write a lot about my life, my upbringing, my experience, and also some really tragic and hard points in my life. Mm-hmm. And so it has been a journey. But what people are seeing right now, I would say, in this phase of my life is just kind of the fruit, you know, from many years of toil in some sense and hardship and a lot of hope and redemption in this season of my life. So it feels like everything's moving so, so fast, but at the same time, it feels like the right time. So I'm glad that all these things are kind of coming together in this way.
I'm glad you mentioned that because I think that gives our listeners a lot of hope as well that, you know, seasons will change and seasons can change and there's the opportunity for redemption and restoration and abundance. And I think you modeled that so well because you've been very vulnerable about your journey on social media publicly with the people who follow you and now transitioning. You've also been vulnerable and transparent about I'm loving life and this is great. And I'm not going to apologize for that. And I love the season that I'm in. And that's really encouraging. You know, you mentioned the anti-racism journal. Can you talk a little bit about that? We're going to be talking about your new book that comes out in January. But can you talk a little bit about that and inform our listeners why they should pick that up or recommend that to someone that they love?
Yeah. So I wrote that journal really kind of out of some conversations that I was having on Instagram in 2020 and asking different questions to people online, just really engaging in conversation. And I realized that a lot of people are looking for a starting point. Like they really want a place where they can talk and ask questions and they want a place where they feel like they won't be judged, you know? And so I was like, you know, I think people need like a journal, a place to write, a starting point to begin reflecting on why they think what they think, why they believe what they believe, what got them there, and maybe what needs to change. And also people who are at the beginning of their learning journey, they really don't want to read a big book, you know?
Right.
They're kind of like, I don't really want to do all of that yet. And so I found that if I could give people a tool where they could begin reflecting, have inner reflection, it's just you and your thoughts, then it would give them the opportunity to begin opening up. And then maybe they could be ready for that next book or that next right. thing. And I list a few recommendations in the back for people. So it's really meant to be a tool to be a conversation starter. You could use it in a group if you feel like you want to connect with other friends, but also it just kind of frees up Black people and other people of color from having to work through some of the beginning questions with people when they really need to self-reflect first. And then they might be more open to having a more healthy dialogue back and forth if they understand their starting point and where they began thinking the way that they do.
You know what I love about this resource is I really appreciate when resources are honest. And the reality is most people are buying them books. They're sending all the anti-racism books to the number ones on the New York Times bestseller. And they're not reading them. They're skimming or they reading the first couple of chapters and saying, I got it. I'll take it. And people are putting in so much work to produce those and they're valuable and necessary. But oftentimes people are at different points in their journey. And so they need that starting place to process and think. And then parlay into, okay, now I'm ready for a bigger book and something deeper. So we'll link that in the description of this particular podcast episode. And so please go and pick that up. But we're here to talk about Remember Me Now. And Remember Me Now really roots itself in this journey back to yourself and also the Black women and people in your life who have shaped you. And so I want to start with Breonna Taylor, because it's clear that the Breonna Taylor situation not just has affected the entirety of justice movements moving forward, but specifically Black women in justice movements and Black women in our communities. Take us back to you hearing about Breonna Taylor and how that shaped you to ask some hard questions about yourself and people like you.
Yeah, so I remember hearing about Breonna Taylor not long after I'd heard about George Floyd and Ahmaud Arbery, and we were hearing about her story late. People were actually just able to highlight it and bring it to the forefront, but what happened to her happened before what happened to both of them. And so I first thought, well, that's crazy that we're just hearing about this, like, nationally, globally. Why is that the case? And I was also pondering on how we have to have this internal family conversation in the Black community, specifically between, you know, Black men and women, when we talk about the ways that Black women really pull up for Black men and the way that it can be difficult to find that same sense of shared support within our own community from the Black men towards Black women. Now, I'm not putting a blanket out there and saying all people do this whatever, but it is true that 9 times out of 10, you're going to see Black women organizing protests, you know, creating action in their local community to really bring awareness to these killings that happen and really supporting our brothers in the fight. And what I saw with Breonna was almost, it felt like she was almost an afterthought. And what happened to her was just so egregious, so tragic, and it didn't even need to happen. And when you look at the roots behind why it happened and the capitalism and all the things that were involved in really trying to make another dollar and costing a life, it is just... it left me frustrated, furious, and in some moments, speechless, especially when I read the report that they initially put out about Breonna Taylor, and it said the injuries were none. Like, and it was like, what? Like, is that what people feel and believe about Black women? That our life, everything, just it's worth nothing? And it really got me thinking about the ways that this country continues to craft narratives and stories around Black women. And it's almost as if every day we have to fight the notion that we are abrasive, harsh, ghetto, you know, you know, we don't want to let anybody else in our lives, selfish, all these kind of things that are kind of put on us. And I really wanted to write a book that was full of love letters to Black women to say, there's a space for us to be soft. There's a space for us to not feel like we have to carry the world on our shoulders and fix it all. In fact, there's some other people who can come in here and fix it too, because what we end up doing is working so hard that our lives are the ones that are paying the price, our personal lives. We pay the price for overextending ourselves, for trying to fix it all, for taking care of everybody but us. And I'm really kind of, you know, putting out there to people that we can only do that for so long. We can only take care of everybody else and not take care of ourselves for so long. Eventually we'll lose ourselves. And in doing all of this, we're also teaching people how to treat us. We're teaching people that come to me at any time. I don't have, you know, boundaries. I'm doing, you know, whatever needs to be done, we'll get done. And I'm sharing that from my own personal experience of doing that, of being burned out, of doing too much, of going way out of my way to do all of these things for everybody else. And in the process, losing myself. And I wanted to write about how I was in the midst of my own pain of losing myself, recovering from, you know, sexual assault and trying to wade through that while also realizing like I'm knee deep in the activism, you know, racial, so-called, as I like to say, racial reckoning of 2020. And I'm personally broken, but I'm focusing so much on activism on the outside. And how can I find my way back to myself in the midst of all that I'm doing? And this book is really a culmination of me finding my way back home to myself. And also just opening up a space of love letters from how I experienced things in childhood through to adulthood. And bringing my sisters with me. I like to say, I open it up with like, imagine we're at coffee together and just talking. And that's how I hope people read it.
Yeah, that is so insightful. I think, you know, when you were talking, I was thinking about Dr. Shaniqua Walker-Barnes and how she often talks about, you know, Black women being used as mules and being used to bear weights and that are disproportionate from everyone else, you know, within the context of the broader community, the beloved community, but especially in the Black community as well. And you said so much there. I want to pull on this thread of journeying back to yourself, because in faith spaces especially, this is not language we typically use. We typically use the language of find your way back to God. You know, and we typically use that, and that's not to diminish that. But oftentimes I think it sounds good to us, but I don't think we think and we process about how self-discovery and reflection is crucial in spiritual formation. And so as you process journeying back to yourself, what does that look like? And I should say maybe before, was that terrifying? Because I can imagine that journey is not a journey that's easy or simple. You mentioned certain things that's going to make that journey difficult and have some obstacles. So what is that journey like for you? What was that journey like and what has it been so far?
I think that journey for me came with a personal cost and a high price. I think that a lot of people don't talk about the price that you pay for making sacrifices, even if it's the right thing to do, even if it's the thing that you know you're supposed to do. So for me personally, what kind of brought me to my knees, to my decision point of saying, I need to find my way home to myself, was really having to reckon and face the fact that I had deeply experienced deep sexual trauma. And I had not processed it because I've been so busy working. I've been so busy doing. And it wasn't until I had to go to the doctor and had to really recount things that I felt this like almost like a wave of grief wash over me. And mind you, this is a whole year later. So I had been just working, doing, and just pushing this pain aside. And I really had to dig deep and ask myself, what do I need? Because right now, I'm doing everything for everyone else. I'm showing up for people. I'm trying to be a good daughter, sister, friend. My husband and I were like newly dating at the time. And I just felt so overwhelmed by everything. And I said to myself, I only have one opportunity to, in my words, I said, quit my life. to quit what I'm doing before I'm married, before I have kids or enter any of those phases in life, to just stop everything. And that's what I did. I resigned from my job. I sold a bunch of stuff at my apartment, and I broke my lease and sold a bunch of stuff, broke my lease. My dad and my boyfriend at the time, Marcel, drove me to Maryland, and I moved in with my brother and his family in their small little guest room. And I started writing this book, but I also was really in this place of beginning to heal. And I was able to begin that process of healing because everything was so quiet. I had removed every single distraction from my life. And honestly, it was a privilege. And I acknowledge that I was even able to do that I had the support and family to do that, because not many people even have the opportunity to do that. And so it was a privilege for me to be able to stop everything. And I'm grateful, because coming home to myself meant I had to face my greatest pain, and it was pain I was running from. And it was very difficult. It's very difficult to sit in the quiet with your pain. It's very difficult to acknowledge where you've been hurt. And I had a therapist, the same therapist I've had for, 6 years, and we kind of just work through different cycles of life. I do check-ins with her. And I was in a phase where I was like, you know what, I need more than just check-ins. And so we definitely walked through things, and she helped me a lot. And I just began to make space for the quiet, ask myself questions, journal, and begin that process of healing. And it wasn't easy. And in many ways, it felt lonely, if I'm being honest, because I left my friends. I left so much of my community, and I was really just to myself. And it might seem so silly, but at the same time, coming home to myself really meant I had to ask myself the question, if I'm not doing anything for anybody else, if I'm not caring for anyone, and it's just me, who am I to myself? And that's the question a friend asked me. She said, Faith, who are you to yourself? I hear you. Everything you're telling me is who you are to everyone else, but who are you to you? So that question led me back through my life to think through all the times I was assimilating and trying to fit in, and college and the loops and hoops I had to go through being at a predominantly white Christian evangelical university, and how I have worked hard over the years to find myself. But coming home to myself also meant not assimilating, not worrying about, all these things people are, talking about and want you to be. It's who do I want to be? If I'm not thinking about anybody else's opinions of me, like, who do I, Faith Renee Brooks, want to be? How do I want to engage with God? How do I want to feel, all of those things? I had to ask myself that question, and I gave myself permission to. So I would say that's what coming home to myself. That was the journey, you know?
Wow. Woo. That's, you said something there. You said, you know how they say that in church. Now you said, you said something right there. That's who am I to myself?
Mm-hmm.
Apart from everyone else, apart from responsibilities, you sit in the quiet and you reckon with the answer. And I imagine for many of us, you reckon with the non-answer because mm-hmm. you don't have an answer yet. You don't know because you've just been assimilating for everyone else. That is profound. I think actually, I hope people will stop, pause the podcast and ask themselves that question, right? Mm-hmm. Who am I to myself?
Hey everybody, this is Tyler.
This is Dr. Jamar Tisby.
And we are excited that you're listening to this episode of Pass the Mic, but let me encourage you to support us. You can do so by going to patreon.com/passthemic. And for just $1 an episode.
Just a dollar?
Now that's the bare minimum. That's four quarters. But if you want to go higher, okay, 5, 10, higher. 15, that's 20, right. 25, whatever it is, that will keep this show going and keep the high quality that hopefully you enjoy. So thank you for listening, but you can take it to the next level.
patreon.com/passthemic. We appreciate you.
This episode is brought to you in part by Thomas Nelson, publisher of Power Moves. Ignite your confidence and become a force. Written and narrated by best-selling author Sarah Jakes Roberts. Power Moves will show you how to open your eyes to the way that God sees you and awaken your boldness to effect change in the world by living out the truth of who God says you are with confidence. Power Moves is available everywhere audiobooks are sold. Visit thomasnelson.com/audio to learn more.
And in this moment, you're healing from this trauma.
Mm-hmm.
You're reckoning with your family's history and then your personal history as well, and how that influences what you do now and how you do it and your mm-hmm. personality, and you're coming home to yourself. And then you're writing this in a book. This is a lot. So at what point did you ever say, all right, this is too much? Because we don't often talk about this moment in the journey where we're healing and everyone talks and romanticizes healing and therapy and all this and get you a therapist and she's going to sprinkle dust on you and then, you know, gold dust, and then you're going to come out looking great and feeling great. And the reality is there are moments where you just say, I'm done. I don't mm-hmm. want to do this anymore. What was that? Was there a moment like that for you?
You know, I think I probably gave up on writing my book like 5 times.
Hmm.
I was always going to finish it. I knew that. But I would always feel like I can't tell another story. There's no more words. I've written everything I can write. And I had a really great, you know, writing coach who kind of helped, you know, reprocess my thoughts and was like, listen, you got more in you. You just need to dig deep. The best advice I could give is that I did not heal alone.
Hmm.
I healed in community. One of the biggest reasons I moved back with my brother is because he has 2 little kids and I just love children. I just think children are the best. And kids are just really healing for me. Yeah, they might not be for other people, but for me, they are.
Right.
And so I really love my niece and nephew. And there's something about being brought back down to earth with the innocence of children that really fills me up. And that really just brings me healing, you know. And some of my hardest times, if I was sad or depressed, my brother would be like, take the baby, you know, just take the baby and, right. and go. Right. And it was just so much fun to be with them. The biggest thing is I wasn't alone. And I knew that if I was going to go to the next level of healing, I needed to not be by myself, you know. Mm. And when I was in Atlanta, I was by myself in my apartment, just living my life. But I was hurting and in deep pain by myself, and I needed my people. So I had that space with my brother to talk, to cry. You know, one morning I was deeply triggered and I was like, I need to talk to you. And he was like, I'm about to take the kids to school. You can get in the car in your pajamas and we can talk. And we did. And I cried most of the way with him, just talking to him. And when I talked to my family and they said, why do you want to share your story? Why do you want to share this pain you've gone through? What motivates you to do it? I said, because there's so many other women that have experienced this, especially in church, that just don't want to talk about it. And I feel like there needs to be a space for it. So I would say that healing is, it's not just this, you know, super succinct journey, you know. Right. I feel like healing comes in waves. And I was surrounded by community. I was also, you know, dating my now husband and opening my heart to love. And I had an amazing person that was just willing to journey with me through this really difficult season of my life and love me through it. And so it was really special. So there was so many multiple layers of healing going on at the same time for me. And, you know, just like I assumed, it was 6 months of me being with my family and writing and all of that. And then I got engaged and we eloped 2 months later. And so I really did only have a short window of time, like one last time when it was just me. And it was the best decision I ever made to heal in community, let myself be okay with not being okay. And there was plenty of days for that. And to keep going and to keep writing, even when it was hard. And that's what I did. So this book, I wrote in there that this, you know, I'm writing this at one of the most painful points in my life. And as I just read it back and have read the book several times, I'm so grateful for the words that have flowed onto the page. And where I am now is a beautiful, beautiful reflection of the way that God can redeem the hard things. So, yeah.
Yeah, that is so helpful. I think that's such helpful, clear advice for people to take and latch on to. I do want to mention, you mentioned your family. I was just having this conversation with my wife because she mentioned something, and a family member had told her after she asked them a question, don't go asking them questions about our family. You know, don't go asking those questions. And I remember this because I was brushing my teeth, and you know how you're brushing your teeth and you're like, you know, and I was like, what do they expect us to do? And I cleared my mouth. I was like, what do they expect us to do? How do they expect us to move forward if we don't know about our past? And she was like, I don't know. And so we had this long conversation about this. And you talk about your past in the book. You talk about your family's history. You talk about roots. You talk about what you've been through and how that's influenced and shaped from family members that are long past now to who you are today. Why did you find it important to do that? And then also, what was that like in the story and the excavation of bringing your family's history to other people? Because that's always very sensitive for Black community, Black families. Some of y'all know what I'm talking about. You know, they just, we're not asking questions. Who is that? I don't know. Like, I had a family member, I made an off comment about slavery, and I wonder where our family, who cares? We here now. And I'm like, I just want to know, you know?
Yeah.
I just
want to know.
So what was that journey like with connecting family to where you are now?
You know, it was something that was really important to me and has become more important to me as an adult to have a better idea of where I come from, because it's just a part of, it's a part of me. And the more you learn about DNA and genes and all these things, you realize, like, I'm deeply connected to these people, you know? And so I wanted to ask my grandparents questions. And so I just started asking. My grandpa is, you know, full of wisdom. I'm actually really close to him. He's my buddy. We talk a lot. And I just asked him a ton of questions. And I recorded some of it and really wanted to hear what he had to say about his dad and his family. And I just realized that this is an important opportunity. I have got to take it. I might not get him to talk this much to me again. And so I like to really dig up stuff, you know, and talk about memories he had. And the more I understood about him and his family, the more I really realized, like, wow, we come from such a rich history and how our family, you know, was a part of the Great Migration, the things they experienced in the South and that brought them to Chicago. And it just felt really important for me to tell that story because it's a part of who I am. And, you know, I get real in the book, you know, about my life. I talk about even when my dad and I have had our own conflicts and my family was okay with it, you know? When you're reviewing this back, you know, they have to ask you, you know, you're saying personal things about family members. Did you ask them? Yes, I asked, you know, I shared it with them. Yes, I read it back to them. And I just got really lucky that my family was open to me sharing aspects about their life and their story. And I feel really honored that I got to do that. My dad and I are really close. And I talk about a really hard time in our relationship when we were not very happy with each other, you know, and we had a lot of brokenness in our relationship. And I get really vulnerable in the book about it. But the point is that things can be hard and complicated. Family stuff can be difficult. But I do still believe that there can be, in some cases, when it's healthy and safe, redemption. There can be healing. Yeah. There can be bouncing back. We can tell these stories where it's good for us to understand where we come from so we can better understand ourselves. I better understood what motivated me in the activism space when I understood what motivated my grandparents who were in the activism space, who I really didn't know that till I was an adult. And so once I learned so much about their journey, I was like, oh, that's why it resonates with me. Like, this is in my DNA. This is what we do. This is who we are. And that is motivating, you know, and it's captivating. And so coming home to myself also meant if I am not viewing myself through the white gaze, who am I? And coming back to me felt like, okay, not only am I going to see who I am from my historical standpoint, but I also want to learn about God from Black theologians and people that I feel like are really speaking to me directly. And that's why I wrote this book. And I wrote this book for Black women. You know, white folks will ask, well, can I read it too? I mean, anybody can read the book. Anybody can read it. But I wrote it to Black women specifically because I wanted us to have a book on the bookshelf. Right. I remember working at a Christian bookstore. I read all those different books. They weren't writing to me. Yes. Most of them were by white authors. They were not writing to me, but I read their book. I found something. I got something out of it. But I always wished there would be a book on the shelf that was for me. And that's why I wrote this book, a book for us. I want everybody to read it. But for Black women, I want them to see the book and say, that book is for me. And hopefully they'll find something within it that encourages them.
Yeah, that's so good. That's so good. The final thing I want to talk to you about is this title, Remember Me Now, and the power of memory in the present. Mm-hmm. How did you choose the title? And I think it's such a powerful phrase because it speaks to the present and where you are, but also it speaks to memory and it speaks to the importance of it. And, you know, it's an imperative instruction. Mm-hmm. Talk about why it was so important for you to call this book Remember Me Now.
You know, I think one of the biggest things that I realized after Breonna Taylor's death was that everybody was willing to say her name in her death. And they weren't saying her name when she was alive.
Mm, yeah.
And so it really got me thinking about how I want it to be remembered. And I was thinking that, you know, we need to be remembered now, not just when we're dead. We need our flowers now. We wait too long to give people their flowers. We wait too long to tell people that they're loved and needed and appreciated. And we give people their flowers when they're gone. Mm. People hear the best about themselves when it's over. And they'll never, you know, they'll never really ever on earth hear it. You know, they'll only get all of those accolades at the end. And it made me think, why do we have to die to get our flowers? Why can't we be remembered while we're here on this earth? And why are Black women oftentimes forgotten?
Hmm.
So I really wanted to present a case for Black women to be remembered right now as we are, for who we are. And we can be honored in the present. We don't have to wait until we're gone. We can do it right now.
Well said. Amen. Amen. The book is Remember Me Now. It comes out in January of 2023. If you are listening to this later after January 17th, go pick it up. Now you can pre-order it. Faith, where do you want people to pre-order the book Remember Me Now?
So you can pre-order the book wherever books are sold. If you go to any indie bookstores or Black bookstores, of course, I highly encourage you to do that just to support the work of Black retailers. So other than that, wherever you want to get your book, you can get it. It's available.
You know, Faith, I haven't said this, but I think the work that you're doing, you know, me in the Pentecostal space, we use this word, we overuse this word. But you have a healing anointing, I think. And watching your journey from afar has been healing. But then now I think you're putting that healing anointing and the power of this on the page. And I think it's going to serve so many people well. I think there is a perception in our movement that we have to be loud and direct, and there's this archetype of a activist that I think people like you are redefining. We're redefining what it means to be an activist. That activist can to be gentle and soft and received, and can define what they need when they need it, and have boundaries and limitations, and heal. And so I think this is going to be really special for people to read. And I can't wait for the world to receive it. And thank you for writing it. Thank you for writing it. Thank you for coming on here. I felt distinctly as I was, as we were talking, like this is why The Witness exists. You know, for moments like this where people can find out that someone else has healed and maybe they can heal too. So thank you, Faith. Thank you.
Thank you.
We're glad to have you as a part of the Witness extended family, and also as a guest again on Pass the Mic.
Thanks so much.